Okay, I mentioned a couple of housekeeping things. Probably ought to mention this. Went in and talked to the post office last week. We were talking about the bulletin situation. How many of you did, in fact, get a bulletin this week that is for this week, that is for this Sunday? Okay, I guess the squeaky wheel gets the grease. The problem is, my suspicion is they just expedited that. And that we can't count on that, because the next person behind me is going to come in and complain about poor service in some other direction, and our stuff is going to get put on the back burner again while everybody else goes to the head of the line. We want to get into the process so that the process is correct, and it turns out there are a couple of things that we can do here that will make their lives easier and make the whole sorting process a lot smoother and more timely. So we're going to try to make some adjustments to the bulletin. Can I take a look at that one, James, just to give people a heads up how this may look? Right now, when you get a bulletin, your address is here. They told us if we'll turn it around, put the address up here so that the fold is at the bottom. Their sorting machinery can handle it as it is right now. Apparently, they have to handle the bulletins and sort them by hand, because we've got them turned the wrong way. If we turn them the right way around, the sorting machinery can do it, and we'll do it much, much faster. And then there's some other things that we can do that we're going to work on. So it's not going to look much different, but it may look some different to you. Your address may be in a funny spot starting this coming week. We'll see what we can do about that. And then a couple of people have been kind enough to point out yesterday's Oklahoman story on the Quail Springs Church of Christ and their introduction of instruments of music into their Sunday morning worship beginning today. I hope that's not a surprise or shock to anybody. They've been flirting with that for about 5 years and deliberately working in that direction. And this is, I said it's a whole lot like you watch a couple going through a divorce and, you know, it's going on and going on and going on, and you keep hoping that they can get it back together and that they will work on the marriage and actually work their problems out and seek to reconcile. And then one day there's a final decree. You know, the judge bangs the gavel down and says, that's it. And you go into kind of a depression about it. Oh, man, I wish it didn't have to be that way. But it's actually been working that direction for a long time. Okay, that's what this is like. This is the final decree. They've just decided that they're going to do that. If you read the story yesterday, you realize that about a third of their members walked out at the announcement. About 350 people just got up and left when the announcement was made. They had about 900, I think they said they had about 900, and then about 300 or 350 walked out, and they're going to go elsewhere. What they didn't say in that article is that a few years ago when this process got started, Quail Springs was running about 1,400, 1,200 to 1,400. But in the intervening years, so many people have fled, have gone to other congregations, and doubtless some have just dropped out. It is a very, very sad situation, and there's not one good thing that I see about it, except if there is any good at all to be reclaimed from this, I think this is an opportunity for us to reaffirm that we worship according to the New Testament, and we're going to continue to follow Christ no matter who decides they're going to do something different. All right? Let's hear from you. What are your comments on that article or that situation? Yes, sir. That does not surprise me. The Bible does not authorize instruments in worship. That's exactly right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think Mark Henderson, who was brought in, I mean, he was hired specifically in order to facilitate this. So, but he is not a fool. And he is, I think he was about as fair and even-handed as he could be and still be on the other side of the fence on this. The only thing is, I think I warned you when we were going through the class, we were listening to Rick Atchley, I said, you will hear Rick Atchley's words come out of other people's mouths as this as people continue to do this and other congregations are swept away. And I saw a whole lot of Rick Ashley in the things that Mark Henderson was saying. But as I say, it's very sad, and one of the things that I thought about, I don't want to waste all of our time this morning, one of the things that I thought about was we have tens of thousands of people in the United States who are abandoning denominational groups in the Roman Catholic Church in order to join the Greek Orthodox Church. That's probably temporarily the fastest growing group in the United States. Greek Orthodox, all Eastern Orthodox churches do not use instruments and music in worship, and they never have. That has been the ancient practice of the Christian church, and they accept that and celebrate it. And it's for theological reasons. They will give you a very strong reason, theological argument on that. It's the same argument we use, by the way. It's not in the New Testament, never has been. In addition to that, there's a guy named John Price. I talked about this book when I was doing the class. John Price is a Baptist preacher who has made a very, very, very strong argument on theological, historical, and psychological grounds for a cappella singing only as pleasing to God in the New Testament worship. So, it's interesting that so many people are abandoning the practice of instruments just as some of our people have decided that it's time to get completely out of step and jump into that. Okay, enough about that. Let's talk about what we can say. We've been trying to talk about influencing people for Christ, and last week we were talking about things you can do, real practical actions that you can do. But ultimately, at some point, we're going to have to say something. In Acts 11:14, as Peter, you know, in Acts chapter 10, you get the story of Cornelius. Peter goes down to see Cornelius, and they are demonstrated to be accepted by God. They wind up being baptized. But Peter was a smart character. He took along seven witnesses with him, and so when they came back to Jerusalem, there's a big furor in the church because these Jewish Christians are going, "You went down to Gentiles!" And Peter brought in the seven witnesses, and they're talking about what God actually accomplished there in front of Cornelius. Now, in chapter 11, this is the instant replay. This is as Peter is telling the story about what happened in chapter 10. In chapter 11, verse 14, verse 13, he told us how he had seen an angel appear in his house and say, "Send to Joppa for Simon, who is called Peter. He will bring you a message through which you and all your household will be saved." There's another version or versions, probably American Standard, maybe the King James Version also says, "He will speak words whereby you may be saved." And I really like that rendering of it because at some point we're going to have to speak words. And we're going to have to actually say something to people and help them to understand about Jesus. Now there are people who will say, "Well, you know, my good life is my declaration of the gospel. That's the way I preach the gospel, just by my good life." But I like what Elton Trueblood said about that. He said, "Those who seek to declare their faith purely by their deeds are insufferably self-righteous." Insufferably self-righteous? Yeah. Nobody is that good. Nobody is good enough to proclaim the gospel without words at all and only by good deeds. It just can't be done. Good deeds are very, very important, and we lose the right to speak if we live corrupt and wicked lives. We don't have a right to speak about Jesus then, because we give the lie to Him every time we turn around. But as important as good lives are, at some point we're going to need to say something, and then we're going to have to plan our remarks. When I was taking preparation and delivery of sermons, I was talking to Stafford North. He's the guy who was teaching the class, and I said, "You know, I'm really worried about doing funerals because I'm afraid I'll just mess it all up. You know, people are already in grief and they're having a bad day, and if I mess it up, they're going to release all that fury on me, and I don't want that." And he said, "Well, that won't happen if you plan your remarks." Well, he was right about that. What he should have told me is, "Chris, you're too consumed with yourself. These people have enough problems without worrying about you. They are not going to be focused on you. They're focused on themselves and their own grief and pain." Where you really get into trouble is at weddings. If you mess up a wedding, you will be killed. I should have known that. Well, that's been my experience anyway. Okay, if you plan your remarks, here's the key. If you plan your remarks, you will not be surprised, okay? Here's some things you can do. You can talk about the church. There are several things going on in the church, and you can talk about things that are happening in the lives of members, how God is blessing them. Nobody seems to object. You know, when you start talking about how God has blessed you and how He's blessed other people, nobody gets all excited and twisted up about that. You can have, you go down to the coffee shop and these guys will start needling you about another congregation's failure, their use of instruments in worship. You start talking about how God has blessed you, they're not gonna argue with that, are they? They're not gonna needle you about that. They like to hear those stories too. So you can talk about that. You can talk about something you heard in Bible class or even, dare I say it, in a sermon. You can talk about that. You can talk about what the young people are doing. You can talk about all kinds of events that are going on around here. You can talk about where you go to church. Now, you have to be willing to listen to their story, too. There's nothing wrong with that. You can listen to their story. And you can talk about what you believe. They're talking about the instrument thing. Okay, well, why don't we use instruments? And, you know, the short answer on that, and by the way, short answers are best. Short answer is, we want to be Christians like the earliest Christians were Christians. We want to do religiously what they did religiously. We figure if we do that, we'll be Christians like they were. End of story. Okay? Otherwise, we just start guessing. And I guess we'll do something else. And I guess we'll do what I like. That's crazy. You can develop the habit of giving God credit for good things that happen. He gets the blame for so much bad. You know, how about giving Him some credit for good stuff? Instead of saying things like, I was just lucky, or we worked really hard, you can say, well, God blessed me when I needed it most. Or no matter how hard we work, we always rely on God to make things finally happen. I said to a couple of people this morning, I'm going to try to change my way of greeting, because typically you've heard me do this a zillion times. Walk around, how you doing? And I say, super. Toby Aldridge has convicted me that that's not the right thing to do. You should say blessed. That's what he does. You say, Toby, how you doing? He say, I'm blessed. You know what? From the very beginning, you're talking in a religious tone, and people, you know, what are they going to do? Argue with you? No, you're not. I'm not. I thought I was. And I like that. So I'm going to try to adopt that, and we'll give Toby the credit on that. Can you imagine, you never know where your influence is going to go, do you? You never know how it's going to work. So Toby has influenced me to do a better job of speaking about Jesus. You can talk about what Jesus has done for you. And again, this needs to be a really, really short story. A minute or two is about all they can stand. And none of these things is what you'd call overtly evangelistic, but all of these things will open the door to a spiritual discussion. And what's our goal? Our goal is to move a person one step closer to obedience. We're not out to win trophies or to win an argument, you know, score points in a debate or anything like that. We're trying to help people in their spiritual journey. They want to do good. They want to be good. They want to be in a right relationship with God. All we need to do is help them move one step closer to doing that. That's all. Yes, ma'am. Okay, political ads are limited to 30 seconds. There are a lot of reasons. Oh, but that's the ideal, is 30 seconds. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you've said enough. Wait, now, let me tell you about that, too, because I need to put in a little plug here. How many of you have sat in a sermon that went 35 minutes? How many of you didn't like it that it went 35 minutes? You know why? You have been trained for 50 years, if you're that old. You've been trained for 50 years that things go in 27-minute segments. That's how long a sitcom lasts on TV. You regulate your life by television scheduling, like it or not. Everybody does. That's why you got 30 seconds. Now look, if you're going to talk to somebody about some spiritual matter, you got about 30 seconds. And guess what happens after that? There's a little internal timer that goes off, goes overtime, overtime, change the subject, That's what you get. I'm sorry. We can sit around and wring our hands about it and claim that, you know, the good old days were better and all that stuff. It won't change a thing, because that's the way people think. That's the way they're going to continue to think. That's why sermons need to stop at about 30 minutes or a little less. They preach. Okay, preach 25 minutes, re-preach it in the next 10. Yeah, it's like that one lady that walked up to a young preacher one morning after Sunday services, and she said, "That's a pretty good sermon, sonny, only you missed a few opportunities." He said, "Opportunities? What opportunities?" She said, "To quit." Okay, let's talk about being considerate. Simple kindness is in short supply. Amen? Amen. It's just not out there much. But if you are basically considerate, you will develop a very rich supply of goodwill. I had to call on a problem with a bill that we paid, and they didn't credit the money properly, although we told them plainly what they were supposed to do. They didn't do it right. So yesterday I called and I talked to this gal on the telephone. Now, anytime you're dealing with something like that, you know intellectually, don't you, that the person you're talking to is not responsible for this situation. And yet, how many times you're already mad and frustrated and you kind of vent that on someone who had absolutely nothing to do with it. I've discovered that if you joke with them and you're pleasant and happy about what's going on, they will do anything for you. They will turn the business inside out to help you if you're just decent to them. But anybody who's ever worked in public contact, if you work in customer service of any kind or public contact of any kind, you know the people come in, they're all angry and upset about something, they just vent on the first face that they see. It has nothing to do with them. You know, often it's our own stupid fault that we get into these problems. Okay, let's go to Ephesians 4:29. This should be a watchword in every Christian's life, Ephesians 4:29. And yet, it's one of the most challenging things, I think, for all of us. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. Okay, we ought to be encouragers, right? We ought to be the kind of people that other people feel good just being around. You get around some of those people once in a while and you just like them instantly because they make you feel good just to be there. They're upbeat and positive and encouraging, and that's just a really, really good thing. And I think Christians need to do that. Any kind of slander, gossip, there is a brand of humor that is, boy, did you look stupid, as just kind of humiliating stuff. All of that should be set aside. Harsh, argumentative words, we don't need that. There's enough trouble out there in the world without us adding to it and piling on. We need to listen carefully and respectfully. James 1:19-20, you should be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to get angry, because man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires. Everyone should be quick to listen. It is so hard for those of us who are not accustomed to listening, but are in fact accustomed to talking. It's hard for us to learn to listen, but it is absolutely critical. And I will guarantee you that if you are known as a good listener, you will have influence in people's lives. They will bring you their problems. They will talk to you about big, important events in their lives. The people who never hear what's going on are those who always have a story to top whatever is said. Whatever you can talk about, I got one to top that. Well, they're not going to bring you anything important in their lives because they just assume you're going to try to top it. Be really interested. The Acts 15 story is really interesting. And Acts 15, they come back. Some people are saying, oh, these Gentiles have to be circumcised, keep the law of Moses in order to be good Christians. And they have this big conference in Jerusalem. Everybody gets together and they're talking about this stuff. And it says, after much discussion, Peter stood up and talked in verse 7. After much discussion. So at least Peter is letting them say what they think needs to be said. But here's the guy who went to Cornelius, okay? He's got divine revelation saying that all men are okay. But he waits and he lets them talk for a while. And then after much discussion, Peter talks in verse 7. And then Paul and Barnabas start talking about their experiences. Well, you know that first missionary journey is in Acts 13. That happened two chapters before Acts 15. They've had a lot of success with the Gentiles. God is plainly accepting Gentiles into the church. And then when Paul and Barnabas begin to talk, the rest of the church begins to listen. They start, it says they are silent, they became silent and listened there in verse 12. So the point here is we gain the ability, really the right to be heard after we've listened to other people. Let's listen to them, see what they have to say. And then when we're ready to talk, we need to talk when it's appropriate to talk. And it's not always appropriate to talk. People sometimes get fired from jobs because they spend their days wandering around talking to people about their souls instead of doing what they were paid to do. Then they walk out claiming it's religious persecution. No, it's not. You were cheating, stealing. You're taking their money and not giving their work. No. You need to talk when it's appropriate to talk. There are some times when it's appropriate. When you already share a bond with people, when faith matters fit naturally into a conversation, people ask you a question about the church. They want to know who you are, what you're doing, what's going on. Or there are bad things that happen in the world that capture everyone's attention, and you can talk about the place of evil in the world and the need for redemption. Those are things. You know, if you start with one of these test questions that they're called, you really slam the door in a hurry. How would you like it if, I mean, you are a strong, faithful Christian, you know your Bible, you go to Bible class, go to worship, you've been doing this for a long time. Bing bong! Someone walks up, rings your doorbell, and you open the door, and a guy looks at you and says, if you died tonight, do you know where you'd go? First thing you want to know is if he's got a gun. You got plans, buddy? You know? It immediately puts you on the defensive, and you think, are you a nut? Well, it's just not going to gain much traction. That's not going to help very much. We need to let it fit naturally into the discussion. And, hey, if people are going to talk about spiritual matters, let's talk with them about spiritual matters. And then I say you ought to plan it ahead of time. Yeah, I really do think so. Think about some things that you could say that would build people up. For example, if someone says, how you doing? You could say, I'm blessed. Well, you know what? I have to plan that because that's not my habit right now. So I'm going to have to change my habit and start doing something differently. Maybe you want to plan two or three or four things about the church and what's going on and what you think, and just plan some remark that would plant some kind of spiritual seed. And then, you know, the thing is, when you're ready to do that, it is amazing how many times it will be available to you. You'll see opportunity after opportunity after opportunity. How many of you have had this experience? I've talked about this before. You go out and you buy a new car, and you think it's the only one in town. And as you're driving home, you see 7 to 10 of them on the road with you. How many of you have done that? Yeah. Well, why is that? Did everybody run to the store at the same time as you to get one? No. You're looking for that. You weren't looking for it before. You never noticed them before, but now that you've got one. Turns out there's a whole lot of smart people out there bought one just like you. Well, if you're ready for these kinds of comments, if you have some comments prepared, you'll just be astonished at how many opportunities present themselves. You just never noticed them before. Never saw it coming. All right, now I want to talk real briefly about what happens when you're blindsided. Sometimes people ask questions or make statements that are designed just to shut us up before we ever get started. In fact, they may just look for an argument so that they can dismiss us and not talk to us again. I was at work one day when I was working in the computer industry, and a guy walked up to me and says, you're in a Church of Christ, aren't you? And they presume that Church of Christ is the name of this denomination. You know what I mean? It's spelled C-H-U-R-C-H-A-C-H-R-I-S-T. Church of Christ. It's all one word. Anyway, he walks up to me and says, "You're a member of the Church of Christ, aren't you?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "That's the group that thinks you're the only ones going to heaven, right? Are you still beating your wife?" What am I supposed to say at that point? This guy's looking for an argument. And he's looking to score some points off of me. Well, once in a while that sort of thing happens. People just come out looking for a fight. Or they want you to fight. Whatever. So there are some things that you can do that will kind of get ready to respond to things. Number one is listen carefully. Okay, what sounds like an attack may not really be an attack. They may be asking a legitimate question, or they may have a misunderstanding about something, or they may have a relative that said something dumb. You never know. It may not be an attack, so just listen carefully first. And if you can keep your cool about that, it may help a lot. Ask questions. Whoever asks the questions controls the conversation. You ask questions. Who said that? Where did you hear that? Did someone say that to you? Okay, you take a case like this. You think you're the only ones going to heaven, right? And I say, "Did someone tell you that?" "Oh yeah, that's what my preacher said." So it wasn't someone from a Church of Christ who said that, but someone from another religious group said that about us. Is that right? "Oh, yeah, I guess so." Don't sidestep the issue. Don't deny the faith. Whatever you do, do not deny the faith. Don't try to just laugh it off as some kind of joke. Go ahead and take it seriously, and you will lose all respect if they think we're being evasive or just trying not to deal with it. But be positive. One of the things that I think is really important is to say what we are, to say what we do. And one of the things that I think gripes people about negative campaigning in political ads: "That guy's a rotten creep. He stands for this and he stands for that. And you don't want any of that, do you? No, that's a terrible thing. Get away from him." Well, okay, you've told me to get away from him, but there is no reason at all for me to think about you. I don't want to hear about him. You tell me who you are. You tell me what you stand for. You tell me what your plans and agenda are. That's what I'm interested in. Well, in the same way, instead of just letting someone define this as an argument, "Well, you're against this and you're against..." "I'll tell you what I'm against. I'm against this and I'm against..." No, wait a minute. Let's talk about who we are and what we do and what we're for. What we affirm. I just think that that's a lot better idea. Always point toward the Bible. If it's just your opinion is every bit as good as my opinion, and there's no reason at all for you to pay the slightest bit of attention to me. But if we point to the Bible, we're into something entirely different. Ask the question, "Well, what does Jesus say about that? What did the apostles write in the Scriptures about that?" And then take them to the Bible. Let's talk about what the Bible says about these things. And the other thing is, don't focus on winning an argument. And don't ignore false statements. You go back to Acts 24 and look at this exchange with Tertullus, the lawyer that the Jewish prosecutors, they're trying to get rid of Paul, so they hire Tertullus to come in and plead their case for them before the Roman governor. And then Paul answers and refutes the false charges, demonstrates that this is just not correct, and just tells the truth. Well, look, the truth is what we're after. That's what we're trying to do all the time. We're not looking for the defeat of an opponent. And it's a wrong attitude from the very beginning to presume that there's anything adversarial about us trying to influence somebody for Christ. They are not our adversary. We have an adversary. That is not them. What we're trying to do is help people move a step closer to God on their faith journey. And I think if we start with a very conciliatory approach and way of thinking about this, we have far more likelihood of helping someone actually take the step. We don't want them reacting against us. We want them drawn to Christ. Okay? And if they were going to get closer to Christ by reacting to us, where in the world does that put us? It puts us on the wrong side of this trip, doesn't it? We want them drawn to Christ. So all we want to do is point to Him over and over. All right. Just get ready for it and plan a few remarks so that you're not completely caught off guard. That's what I would say. Any comments, questions? Yes, ma'am. Okay. Well, it depends, I think, a whole lot on your attitude, body language, tone of voice. If you say, we don't add to the Scriptures and we don't take away, you know, if you kind of rear back and say, well, I'll tell you what, we don't add to and we don't take away. So there, buddy. You know, then, you know, you're kind of slamming the door at that point. But if you, you'd have to be a nut to do that. But if you say, you know, we try not to add anything to it, try not to take anything away from it because we think God is in charge, it's His Scripture, it's His church, and so on, then you leave the door open for them to say, well, we don't do that either. And you say, well, okay, I think that's the right attitude, that you shouldn't add anything or take anything away. So you guys do, for example, have the Lord's Supper every first day of the week, don't you? And then let them work on that. Yes, sir. All the good old days, yeah.
Back in the good old days, the Church of Christ was pretty top heavy on debates. I've gone through a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Most part of some of them.
Yeah. Let me say a word about the debates, because we did kind of get the reputation of being the debating fellowship. First of all, in the beginning of that process, when it was Alexander Campbell, Walter Scott, Barton W. Stone, some of those guys who were struggling, T.B. Larimore, some of those guys who were struggling to come out of religious error. Found out pretty rapidly that when they got a hold of somebody like Moses Lard, that was the worst experience of their lives, because these guys really knew the Scriptures and they just ate them alive. Well, in that scenario, as that went on and got into the first part of the 20th century and probably the first 20 years of the 20th century, those debate offers started drying up. You know, they didn't want to hear from us anymore, and so they didn't pursue that. But we had raised a generation of people who thought that was really cool and neat. And so they ran around challenging to debates. And when we ran out of other groups to debate, we started debating ourselves. Well, it doesn't accomplish much anymore. And I don't mean to suggest, all I'm trying to say is that times have changed. People do not seek truth in that way any longer. The Scriptures do not have automatic authority to settle those questions, and so they're just really not interested. Yes, ma'am.
Ben Bailey really had a good lesson this morning. He comes on at 8:30 on chapter 52. He was excellent, addressing a lot of the things that we've talked about.
Really? How did he say that we should influence people for Christ? Mm-hmm. That's a good question. Yeah, and that is a good point. You know, if we have the Scriptures, everything we need for life and godliness, I think Peter said that, 2 Peter 1:3, then you don't need creeds or something like that. But you know, in my experience, and I don't know, y'all may have a different experience this way, but my experience, people in other religious groups do not read those creeds and don't have a clue what's in them. They do not feel bound by that creed at all. They don't even know it's there in many cases.
It might be,
and then maybe they'd start thinking, "Well, I'm glad we don't have, you know, go to their preacher and say, well, I heard this guy say we don't go by creeds. I'm glad we don't have one." The preacher goes, "Well, wait a minute, let me explain something to you. You ever heard of the Philadelphia Confession of Faith? So, yeah, maybe there's an opportunity there. All right. Sorry we're out of time. I had too much fun with too much other stuff. Palmer, do you have something you wanted to throw on us just before we go? Mm. Okay.
And so what he said, well, it doesn't really make any difference what I believe about
it, does it? Mm-hmm. There you go. That's called planning. Called planning your remarks. You know, taking the scriptures. They have an argumentative question. Let's, you know, it doesn't matter what I think. Let's go see what the Bible says. By the way, I believe Robert Oglesby is going to be in Oklahoma City next month. I think that's right. Mm-hmm. There you go. All right.